It's an overcast Monday in West London. He's Jules. I'm Gab. We have an insanely packed show because we got two massive derbies. We have Barcelona elections, but one place to start, which is Dia Clásica. And we have with us the legendary Jan Åge Fjørtoft. Jan, let's get right into this. 8 minutes in, the monster that is Erling Braut Haaland has scored twice. And can you just take us there a little bit? Because I know you always talk about Bayern's mentality. They always come back. But you, like me, must have thought, all right, this is it. This is where they draw the line. This is where the Red Empire crumbles.
Yeah, we hope so. But I must admit as well, when we were 2-0 up, Jordan, we said, well, this is Bayern winning 5-2 then. So I missed with one goal. But in Norway, you can't imagine the enthusiasm around Erling. And we know about the enthusiasm around the world because of this phenomenon. Erling Haaland, and the Bundesliga rights were like a sleeping right for us because we had Jarstein in Berlin and Ryerson in Union Berlin, and we had some players with a Norwegian flag again. Then suddenly Erling appears on the stage, and now we're just shaking our heads. What we are a part of, because it's unbelievable. It took him 8 minutes, and if we look at the stats before that, he didn't have a great spell late in the 8-9 last goals, but we tend to forget that, of course. And then he scored 2 in 8. He could have scored 8 in 2 as well. But it was funny, boys, because before the game, we had an interview that I made 10 days ago with him. And then he said, every time Bayern play, every time Robert Lewandowski plays, I watch it on TV. I try to learn from Robert Lewandowski how to improve my game. And the problem is only when I score one goal, this guy always scores 3. So this was his prediction before the game. So you can imagine how he felt during the game.
It's easy to narrow this down to the battle of the strikers, the future and the present. I don't quite know if people's minds work that way, but there's no question that Lewandowski and then Sané popping up, where he goes and that move where he leaves Nico Schultz on the spot.
Yeah, but then it's a shot. Yeah, it's not a cross from Leroy Sané.
You think so?
I think he hits it with his right foot, and because it's his right foot, he goes as a cross, and then it's a tap in.
Either way, though, Jan, you weren't surprised by the comeback. I mean, you joked about it before, and I was kind of struck by how this kind of encapsulates Bayern seasons, because you know they have major issues at the back. I think Boateng is probably still in Haaland's pocket from those first minutes. But then they come back and they ride the individual quality and they ride kind of that never say die ethos that they always talk about, and we say this is corny and stupid, but it's real, Jan. It's real.
It's very real, and I think sometimes we as pundits and sometimes as well by myself that I was never on that level, and I can't kind of feel how it is to just put another gear in. I remember they were 3-1 down at Bielefeld. Of course they came back in that snow game. Then they're playing the Champions League, and then they say, okay, we have to improve our game. Then they're playing against their main challenger, that is Dortmund. They're 2-0 down. Everything builds into the way Dortmund wanted the game, because they wanted to take them on counter-attack, and from then on they just turn it around. Having said that, with Sané, I think that trick that he did on Schultz before he first took a run to get Schultz away, then he got the ball, and that shoot trick was one of the best moments of the game. That was fantastic. And of course, it doesn't matter if it's a cross or a shot, of course, Robert Lewandowski is the end of that ball too. But in giving compliments to Erling Haaland, wow, we have to compliment Bayern Munich. Although they are conceding, I think they've conceded more goals now than they did whole last season. And they have the best goalkeeper in the world back there. And still, they managed just to win, even under pressure.
Jan, I'm sorry, I can't have this. We have to stop. You really believe that Manuel Neuer is the best goalkeeper in the world? I don't think he's the best German goalkeeper, let alone the best goalkeeper in the world. Am I wrong, Jules?
That's punchy from you.
I is this something we say? But like, do you think Neuer is on the level he was at last season?
I think Manuel Neuer is the best goalkeeper in the world. And if you come up with a better one, you can talk me into that. Oh, but who is the better one?
So you think Ter Stegen is better than Neuer right now, with the season that Ter Stegen has been having as
I
well?
I think that Manuel Neuer is better keeper than Ter Stegen. And I feel unlucky for Ter Stegen that he is a part of that generation that he don't get a lot of games yet.
Well, I think that's a big call.
You think Ter Stegen is better?
It's a big call.
Yeah, I think Oblak is better too, for what it's worth, and I think Courtois
is better.
You love
Oblak.
But hey, that's just me. Just quickly here for TV segment, Jan. I know Edin Terzic will be slaughtered by Jules very shortly, and probably by me too. Then again, no Jadon Sancho. No Guerrero, which I think makes a difference. No Akanji.
Witzel,
of course, has been out for a while. I mean,
Reina.
Yeah, and Gio Reyna, yeah. I mean, should we be a bit kinder to him?
I don't think you should be kinder to them. I agree with you. They went into this game in 4 wins in a row. And you can ask yourself, do we think that all these players would Sancho have traveled if this was a decisive Champions League game? Maybe. But what I can say about Terzic is that we thought when they published Marco Rose being the new manager, we thought they will have 2 lame ducks, and it ended up with just 1 lame duck, and that is Marco Rose. And I 100% agree with the report in Germany. If there was fans in the stadium, Marco Rose would have been fired now at Gladbach. I think that when I talk to the players of Dortmund, they are very happy with Terzic. They say he's working very hard in training to define their roles and everything. But it's all about getting that top 4. They sacked Favre because they wanted to get closer to Bayern, and being outside top 4 is scandalous for Dortmund. And I think that could have enormous consequences for their player logistic, as they nice say.
Jules, as ever, you can be hard on managers. You identify the turning point in this game, the moment when Dortmund lost.
And that's nothing to do with Terzic, and we'll get onto his case later. But I just thought there's that big chance for Dortmund where Thomas Meunier completely misses his cross for Erling Haaland. It would have been a tap-in for Haaland. Well, there was no year on the line, so I don't know what would have happened. He might have made a Superman save, but it would have been a huge chance. And yet, I'm not even sure if it's a cross or a pass from Meunier, but he misses completely. And after that, I think that would have been the full breakthrough for Dortmund. And I just think when you play against a Bayern team like this, even if you 2-0 up after 9 minutes, you cannot miss those kind of opportunities. Otherwise, it comes back to haunt you, and it's exactly what happened on Saturday.
Yeah, and you're going to tell me they still would have come back.
But I 100% agree. And Meunier, I mean, as a striker, you live and die by crosses. Haaland dying of crosses. Because Meunier, he couldn't cross. I tried to find a metaphor to get Dracula into this, but he can't cross anything. And the way he did that, I said in our show, I said it was like he was wearing his tuffles, or I don't know if that's called that in English anyway. But what kind of pass was that? That was
crazy.
Nothing. That was a clumsy something like a 15-year-old would have. Nah, 15-year-old wouldn't do that. 12-year-old would have done. And can you imagine being a number 9 in Dortmund? And the last time you got a cross was like when you played in training before the season. And when you compare that, and we talked terrible. About this boy.
At that level.
Robert Lewandowski, he gets crosses all game along, and Haaland never get one cross. Never.
Yeah, and that's my point. How many scores would Erling Haaland scores in the Bayern Munich team? This Bayern Munich team that gives so much service to Lewandowski, regardless of how amazing Lewandowski is, how many more Haaland would get?
But it's easy to say that he will already have beaten Gerd Müller's record. But we should, to be fair to Robert Lewandowski, I mean, he is one of the best number 9 of all time. And I think if you put Erling Haaland in that Bayern team, it would be also well plus that he would get more crosses, of course. But there won't be enough space, because remember, Bayern always play on a very deep standing teams, and that is Lewandowski's. He's fantastic. His ability there to break down deep standing defenders are very good. Erling can do that as well, but that's not his strength when you compare to Robert Lewandowski.
Yeah, I think I get what you're saying, and I think Jan just made a great point.
Yeah.
This idea that if you were to switch them around, well, first of all, if you were to switch them around, if Lewandowski returned to Dortmund before he left them Judas-like to join Bayern, I think he would still score a ton of goals on this team. Because obviously he can do the counterattacking thing, he can play in the open space, he's got the dialogue. Haaland, I think, would have to make an adjustment, perhaps a bigger adjustment. I also wonder, Haaland having Thomas Müller around him all the time in that space, would that somehow limit the space, because Müller seems to cover so much space on the pitch? Obviously, with certain, it would be an adjustment, right? With certain strikers,
but it will improve that part of his game.
Yeah, no, he would be improving, but I don't think it would be automatic that if you were to swap them around, Haaland would score more than Lewandowski.
Yeah, but there's no one in that Bayern team that would cross the ball like Meunier did for Haaland. Even Niklas Süle would have put a perfect cross in.
Or Buna Sarr?
Okay, maybe not Buna
Sarr. Okay, thank you. Let's go back to Bayern a second here, because I highlighted, and maybe it is wishful thinking, some of their defensive frailties. And, you know, we've said before that when they've conceded goals and had to come from behind, which they've had to do many times this season,
yeah.
You know, sometimes it was because they defend best from the front. So they had that spell when Thomas Muller was out, when I thought that really, really affected him. Mm. But it's not just him. I mean, Leroy Sané, I think, is at fault for I can't recall if it was the first or the second goal. Boateng, I thought, was all over the place. Projecting forward, do they need Gnabry fit and in the starting lineup? Given how inconsistent Sané is, more defensively than going forward right now? I mean, if they want to win the Champions League, obviously.
But I think that when that is the possibility Flick is having with Sané, because Sané got that X factor. When he is on fire, he eats on fire. He can break down teams. But, I mean, his substitute is then Gnabry, who's always scoring goals, producing for Bayern. And that is frightening. But it seems to Bayern, I mean, they're reigning champion in the Bundesliga, winning is it 6 titles now they won since Flick came there. And it just seems that Bayern need a wake-up call. They need a wake-up call. Either that is a goal against, or it's something called Champions League. They just need that extra thing. The only way we think back now, they lost, it was against Holstein Kiel in the Cup. That was not typical. You just expect them to come back as well. Do I think they could go all the way this year as well? I think they will certainly win the German League, of course. Could they go all the way to win the Champions League? Yes, I think so. Because these players, first of all, the winning mentality, and this what we think that is their weaknesses, that they kind of do those kind of things. When the goings get tough, the players are there. But I think as well that they need, especially at the back, they need to freshen things up. They will lose Alaba now. Boateng, we don't know what happened to him. Pavard is on and off. Hernandez don't seem to trust him big time, and so on and so on. So we can expect them to freshen up a bit. Yeah,
I think one of the things, and you know, sometimes we overcomplicate this, right? And I go back to the words of Max Allegri when he made an analogy between basketball and football. Sort of when you're coming from behind in the NBA, you know, a lot of times what do? You just give it to the guy who's good one on one. He beats his man. He creates an overload. And I think Bayern, probably more than most teams, have people who can do that. We saw Sané do that. Lewandowski can certainly do that. Koeman, yeah. I think, does it exceptionally well. Alphonso Davies does it exceptionally well. It's not necessarily great tactics, great patterns of play, but it is a weapon that you always have at your disposal, don't you, Jan? You can have the best defensive setup in the world, but if somebody wins an individual one-on-one battle, all of a sudden, you're in trouble.
Yes, and you have so many players, and you mentioned them there, players who make the difference. A nil-nil, a 1-0, a 1-3, they always seem to come up with something. And when you have so many players that can do that, some teams, they will have one or two. If you compare them with Dortmund before this season, we hope they will be the main challenger. But have a look at the team who played now in Munich. How many blind passengers they have, is that an English expression? They have so many players who should never, they're not a contender to be tough. I mean, Schulz, not good enough. Meunier, not good enough. I mean, we can go, a goalkeeper. What is wrong with the goalkeeper, the Dortmund at the moment? They just seem to be there. They don't seem to be any match winners.
He's pretty bad.
Birky, doesn't matter who's playing. At the moment, they don't make any significant change. And then you have Sancho, yes. You have Haaland, yes. And then you have 3, 4, 5 players who are all alike, and then you compare them with Bayern. We're talking about the offensive player. Then you have a look at Goretzka, Kimmich. I mean, if you wanted a wall of solid players who can also score goals, also have that way of inspire their teammates. I mean, are there any better 2 number 6 in the world at the moment than Goretzka and Kimmich?
No, you're probably right. And you know, I think as well, psychologically, if you're Nagelsmann in Leipzig and you're in that title race and you're 2 points behind and you're actually leading when Haaland scores those 2 goals, you're top of the table. What kind of damage does that do to you when you're watching? And I know Leipzig will host Bayern at the start of April, so in what, 4 weeks or something. So they will have their chance to beat them and to go top of the table if still the gap is still 2 points. But psychologically, you watch them against Bielefeld, they're 3-1, and you say, okay, maybe they're going to lose and drop points, and you know we can come back. Then you see that game and you say, okay, maybe they're going to lose and drop more points and we can be on the top of the table.
I think Leipzig will be just fine because they're used to this. They're used to this Bayern narrative. And what they have, actually, they have a whole bunch of individuals as well who can win those one-on-one battles. And different people pop up at different times. Kevin Campbell, who I think has been on the shelf on and off, there's an amazing statistic for Leipzig. I know we're digressing a little bit, which really surprised me. There are only two Leipzig outfield players who have never been on the bench this season. One is Upamecano. I'm blanking on the other one. To me, that is incredible. To me, there's no other big team in the world who is like this, right?
Yeah, but every time they think they're going to catch Bayern, every time there's something happening.
I
know, but I don't think psychologically it could be damaging.
Jan, thank you for celebrating Kimmich and Goretzka, because that's huge. I'll tell you guys what. I'm still on the Leipzig bandwagon. I see you seem to be getting... Okay, all right,
fine. No, I am too. I'm just saying...
But
I'll tell you
what could derail Bayern. I'm not saying will, but could, whether in the Champions League or indeed in the league. And these are, I think, to me, the two biggest areas of concern, and they're still there. One is, we touched upon it, defensively, there are still major issues. You can't always count on coming back. The other one is, I think they do have certain key individuals who, when they're not there, things fall apart because they don't have the alternatives in depth. Obviously, Thomas Müller, we saw that when he was out. That is a huge loss defensively as well. Lewandowski goes without saying. And again, in midfield, Kimmich and Goretzka, when one of those two guys goes out, and I know they kept winning when Kimmich was injured earlier this year, but their expected goals, all their metrics kind of fell off. Because Tolisso is obviously always injured, and when he's there, it doesn't make much of a difference. Roca, whatever. One or two injuries or suspensions at the wrong time, and the defensive issues, if Bayern fail to win the Bundesliga or the Champions League, that will be the reason why. Do you agree, Jan?
Yes, I do think so. Now they've been, you see that at Liverpool now, I mean, that is, should be an extra podcast only for Liverpool, but you see, if you use the same players over a long period of time, you kind of, but that doesn't seem to happen at Bayern. It seems that players they're having, they need to play all the time. Rebel Lewandowski never seems to get tired. There's always hunger, like all the players in there. And I agree with you. The main thing is, of course, Robert Lewandowski. I agree with you with Thomas Müller. Thomas Müller being maybe the most influential Bayern player. I see that as identity and everything. But Robert Lewandowski, I mean, Choupo-Moting is not good enough. Not even close.
No.
But somehow they seem to be fit all the time. But we see in other teams as well. You need your key players in there. And I'm not sure that Bayern are more vulnerable than their competitors in the league. And they seem so far so good, seem to replace them somehow. Having said that, I take your point to Thomas Müller that they somehow doesn't fit in a player when he is out. Because it seems when Thomas Müller is playing, he doesn't know himself where he's running, but he's always efficient. So he's like an unbelievable individual in the world of football.
Jan, thank you so much for your time. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough German stuff, because Jules, after 21 consecutive victories, 15 of them in the Premier League, Manchester City's run comes at a halt in the most staggering fashion against Manchester United in the derby.
Yeah.
You had the opportunity to catch up with Harry Maguire after the game, and he revealed his game plan.
Yeah, well, some of it at least. But he said that they, preparing the game, they realised that City were always starting well, scoring often. He said pretty much every game they played in that winning run, they scored early in the first 15 minutes or 20 minutes. So he said that we felt, as in United, felt that they had to go at City and catch them. And if you look at the kickoff, which Bruno Fernandes took, instead of trying to keep the ball, Bruno gives the ball to Lindelof, who hoofs it forward into City's half, straight into throw-in, that then Gabriel Jesus would lose, it would lead to the penalty, etc. But very much the idea was, let's go into their half, be aggressive, put them under pressure, and then see what happens. But don't let them dictate the game from first second, because that's where they're really good. And he also knew that if you score first, then you know, which hadn't happened since November in all that run. But if you score first, it's obviously harder for City then.
Especially if you're United, and I don't want to say, you know, you're a counter-attacking side, because otherwise people get angry.
No, but
oh, you're dissing Ole. But no, you counter-attack and transition very, very well.
Yeah. Right? I mean, Maguire said we could have been braver with the ball and we were not, and maybe this is something we have to work on. But he was really fair and said, you know, we were not that great with the ball, but that was not the idea anyway.
Yeah, later in the show, I'm going to mention United's 6 monthly results. Needless to say, they made a ton of money in the last
as
6 months
always,
somehow.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, if I'm Avram or Joel, I look at this and I say, we made huge profits. We're second in the Premier League. And look, we just beat Manchester City, who are supposedly the best team in the world, without our three highest paid players.
Yep.
David De Gea, Paul Pogba, and Edinson Cavani, not necessarily in that order. So why do we need to spend money? We don't have any fans there. We're still minting it.
But isn't that the story under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? Isn't that the story that every time when they're a bit struggling, when there's a big game, they come out and win, and then you think, okay, well, let's give him a bit more time, let's give him more chance, because there's something there he can maybe capitalize on or build on. I don't know how you build on this performance. I guess you play Milan on Thursday night, and Milan, they're a playing team. They like having the ball, the good movement, etc. So you could play exactly
the same. Well,
everybody's
injured for Milan, so I don't know that you should worry about them too much.
Yeah, but still, the idea is still that. So you can play exactly the same against them that you did against City on Sunday. But certainly, I thought in how aggressive they were, the defensive shape, the effort, the work ethic, everything was perfect from United. They were so good. And then Luke Shaw became Roberto Carlos for the space of 1 minute.
It was fantastic.
And then that was enough. You know, but I think we have to give them a lot of credit anyway.
Talk about City. Is this a blip? Because I know Pep came out and said, we played well. But I go back to what he said before, where he was concerned about them not taking their chances, even when they were winning. And I've said it before, looked at the numbers, this is going to probably end up as the lowest scoring team that Pep has ever put out there.
Yeah.
And you can point to Aguero, who, you know, clearly isn't in a condition to play anymore. You can point to Gabriel Jesus, who may be the center forward for Brazil, but guess what? Like, even with Aguero out, there's times when he would rather play with nobody up front or with another midfielder than with you. Does this become a concern, not so much in terms of the Premier League, but does it become a concern maybe in the Champions League?
Maybe. Certainly, it was just a game where nothing went their way on Sunday either. And I think,
well, a lot of individuals were poor too.
Oh, yeah.
I think
all
De Bruyne,
missed passes.
Sterling.
They gave away the ball so much. But just a pass like this, like me to you, it was just intercepted, or it was the wrong pass, or the weight on the pass wasn't good. And then they created a few chances, but it was nothing like exceptional. I think United were pretty comfortable defending for most of the game.
It felt like City took a million shots on goal, but a lot of them were low XG chances.
Yeah, completely. And Cancelo didn't have a good game. And when Cancelo doesn't have a good game, then you see it. No Bernardo Silva, which I think you lack a bit of intensity. You lose some intensity because Mahrez doesn't give you as much. Neither do De Bruyne and Gundogan. So I think there's a lot of things for Pep to ponder and to look at. But it was certainly not a good performance from City, I thought.
All right, podcast listeners, you're still with us, which is why I dropped my voice, because we're going to get a little more intimate and grounded. No. All right. Can we show some love for United?
Yeah, of course. They deserve to.
Especially within the context, I think, of individual performances, right? Fred and McTominay
I thought looked really good in shielding the back four, which they did well. The defense held up. You mentioned Shaw doing his
Roberto Carlos impression.
These are all good, but you want to show love for Martial.
So these are all good. And considering the 3-0 before, especially the one at Crystal Palace, we're like, okay, you know, this is much better. This is much an improvement in terms of character, personality, attitude, everything you want. But I thought Martial, for all the slack that he got, the racial abuse, the critics, everything. And he hasn't been good from his own account. He said it.
So it's fair to criticize him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, good.
But to a certain extent.
I'm sorry.
No, but when he plays well, please tell me that he's playing well. Because it's okay. You can't just destroy someone when he doesn't play well. And he hasn't played well for most of the season.
I'll
but when
what,
he does
here,
well.
Here's a little newsflash. Okay. If City had somehow scored two goals and that game had finished 2-2, with those chances he missed in the second half.
Okay, the first one is hard, the header. The header is hard. The second one, yeah, of course, he opens his right foot. It's a bit on Ederson. It's not a huge save from Ederson. It's a bad miss. But the penalty, all the effort, all the holder play that he did, all the builder play, all the
penalty,
movement.
You can thank his fellow striker on the other team there, no?
There's five around. Have you seen the photo? He looks like Maradona against Belgium in the 86 World Cup. There's five around him. He still keeps the control of the ball, and then it's not his fault. Gabriel Jesus makes a stupid foul.
I wonder.
I think he deserves a bit of love and credit, and because he was good.
Okay, I wonder because you know we view matches in isolation. So somebody plays well, or team plays well, and we praise them, and then we all get down, right? We both watched them that horror show against Crystal Palace in midweek with a fog, right?
I might have fallen asleep for parts of it, but yeah,
they looked so tired and so out of it. And, you know, they're playing a team, and I say this with the greatest respect, but Roy Hodgson's out of contract. He's not getting a new one. They have, like, 15. I mean, I heard last night 24. It can't be right.
No.
They have a million players out of contract in the summer, right?
It's a shame.
Palace have done their job. They're not going down. They're done, right? They're on the beach, as we used to say, back when the beaches were open. Do we think Solskjaer read them the riot act after that, and that's why they ran so hard? Or that doesn't seem to be in Solskjaer's... Do you think they brought back Fergie to do? I don't like, how can the same team? I'm just forget the quality, right? But just energy.
But it's levels. A different game plan. You don't play this. You know, if you have a lot of the ball against Crystal Palace and you don't score in the first 10 minutes like they did.
But they couldn't run.
But
after the first half hour, you know, the whole like, oh, let's start well as opposed to hey, let's start badly. They couldn't run against Crystal Palace, and now they go and they run. Like did somebody go and crack the whip and put a rocket up their backside?
I don't think so.
And
one
say,
is
we
a
don't
derby.
Just...
Maybe they were. Maybe the motivation for the Crystal Palace game in the fog on the Monday night is just a bit like, you know. And then this is a derby. It's away. You do well against them away from home. This is your third win in a row at the Etihad. Solskjaer, clearly, there's not many managers who've won more against Pep than lost. He's one of them. So maybe the mentality was different. And also, I still think, and it's not a criticism of the way they played, it's easier to play a game like this where you're going to defend and you're going to work hard for each other and that shape than having a lot of the ball and having to make runs everywhere to try to
more
break
to how
down
another
team.
To how they looked physically.
No, of course. I mean, They look far more pumped up than they were on Monday night, no doubt.
Marcus Rashford hobbled off, looked like something ankle, with his ankle. We'll find out closer to time whether he can play again in the Europa League, since that's another that was a big theme, right, that we touched upon on Thursday about how Rashford and Bruno Fernandes always play. He doesn't rotate them, so they look tired. He didn't look tired. He had so much energy in this game.
And
I thought he played really, really well, actually. I know you'd rather praise Martial than Rashford,
it's a very similar game. Rashford played for the team. You know, he didn't have much of the ball. He had, I think, one shot. But he defended so well. He trailed back. He put pressure.
But he's a question
the press
mark
was
for
really
Thursday
good.
Is what I'm doing.
He looked really in pain when I saw him going straight into the... He had to walk all around the pitch as well with the physio literally limping off and then going straight into the tunnel. They didn't look good. But again, he's played so many games that I think that he can pass on the one against Milan on Sunday.
You have your Bruno Fernandes issues about how... Yeah.
Why did he play so long? You're 2-0 up. The game is finished. I don't think
we could go a whole show with just praising Solskjaer. We have to question why.
No, but it's like it's almost like it's your lucky charm.
I can answer that question.
You can't take him off before the 87th or 88th minute. He could have come off 75th easily.
I can answer that. I can answer that question. Why he played those extra 12 minutes, which upset you so much? Is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, as you know, is a regular listener to the show,
and Bruno as well,
and Bruno too, and they often listen together. Actually, in fact, on their way back from training. and he's heard you say that he doesn't score, he doesn't turn up in big games, right? You have said that about Bruno Fernandes.
I've said that.
And he's like, okay, so I scored one, but that was just a penalty. You know, I want to do more. I want to prove Julien wrong. Yeah. I want to show Jules that, no, I can score in
a
big game.
He needs to do a bit more.
And that's why I want to say
He needs to do a bit more than just the penalty. Because, again, he defended really well and he worked really hard for the team. But with the ball, it was pretty simple.
All right, goalkeeping situation. No, David De Gea initially said it's personal reasons. Now apparently it has to do with the birth of his child.
It's not apparently.
Well, I just don't understand why you can't say the first time what it is. When he doesn't play midweek, it's like, oh, unavailable for personal reasons. Okay, fine, then tell us. But now all of a sudden you can tell us why he's not there. You know,
well, it's because the baby was not born on Monday night. Maybe they didn't want to say anything before the baby was born. I don't know.
Well, they played on Wednesday. You're saying on Wednesday, whatever. I know.
Yeah.
Okay. But the point is, there's a lot of support for Dean Henderson. When David De Gea comes back, should he have a starting spot back?
It's the whole debate, isn't it?
I'm asking you.
Yeah, no.
Do you have a view, or are they all much of a muchness too?
My view is that...
you don't have a
So what, is it yet? Two clean sheets in a row now for Henderson?
For Dean Henderson, yeah.
De Gea made that great save on Ziyech in the Chelsea game, and that was a clean sheet as well. Personally, I would give a good run to Henderson and see how he does in an end of the season where there's a lot of games to be played. It's good for him to play. I think he deserves to play. He's earned the right to play, and I would like to see him playing at the weekend, playing against Milan, playing at the weekend, the Leicester Cup game, all those games. Give him 4 or 5 games in a row now. And then you can assess him a bit more than just one game there against Sheffield United, then one game there, Palace and City, and then De Gea comes back. What do you think?
It's a really tough one because ordinarily you would say, okay, I've got two assets, two guys who are good enough to be starting goalkeepers in the Premier League. There's no question there, right? I should sell one of them, raise money, so that the Glazers can get even more dividends. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
Do it to strengthen the team. I don't need two goalkeepers of this caliber. Also, because Henderson will rightly go and say, "Hey, how about I get a new contract and I get the kind of money that my performance is justified." The problem is you can't sell De Gea because
he would not leave anyway.
Money. Right?
But then you risk losing Henderson if you don't play him enough. He can say in the summer, "I'm off now. I don't want this. I'm not a number two. I can play in the Premier League, pretty much in any other team." Let me go.
It's a tough position. It goes back to the silly decision of giving De Gea all that money. Mm. All right. With regards to City, I touched on this before. Everybody seems to have ignored this, but this is the lowest. This could be one of Pep Guardiola's best teams. They could go on to win the quadruple.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, they are favorites for the Champions League. And, of course, they always win the League Cup anyway, and they're in the FA Cup, right?
So, yeah.
And yet, this could also be the lowest scoring team, which is weird. It's a weird dichotomy, isn't it?
But do you think this is a conscious, almost tactical decision to be more pragmatic, more in control? Don't always go and try to score another and another and another. And maybe so you don't lose too much energy either. So you manage your own fitness.
That's
you
a
manage
good theory.
Your own games.
The problem with that theory is they're still taking a lot of shots. They're just taking worse shots.
Yeah.
That's the problem with that, right? Because if I shoot from outside the box, I'm either score or I give the ball back to the opposition. Right?
Yeah.
So it's not about control. I just wonder if in his mind, being the obsessed perfectionist that he is, he's looking at this and he doesn't quite like it. He likes certain things, but he's asking himself, what's going on further up the pitch? And everybody takes for granted they're going to go for a center forward in the summer. Although, equally, we talk to people in Spain, people seem 100% certain that they're signing Lionel Messi.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure you'll score more goals with Lionel Messi.
Sure,
however,
yeah.
That's obviously not a long-term solution there.
So one for the future.
It's a tough one. What would you do? Would you, if it comes down to,
yeah,
blow the money on Mbappe or Haaland, somebody like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or get Messi. What do you do?
If it's one or the other, and you lose Kun Aguero, who's out of contract,
we can assume Kun Aguero's already gone.
So I don't think you can be left with Gabriel Jesus.
Option three, which is make Gabriel Jesus your everyday center forward. And
then hire, and Delap. And Delap as a...
No, not Delap. And then you bring in somebody... Yeah, Delap. No, and then you bring in somebody else to kind of be the heir apparent. You know, you bring somebody of Jesus's level,
yeah, okay,
and you alternate
yeah,
to the two strikers, and then some games you play De Bruyne up front.
If you can go for Haaland or Mbappe, if you've got that money now, as much as Leo Messi is the GOAT, and as much as we love him and everything,
ahead of Messi,
100%. Sure, but sure, who would go against that? Who would say no? Hang on, I can choose between a 20 or 22-year-old Mbappe or Haaland, who are the future of football, the next huge thing, or get a 34-year-old Messi, who's going to give me 1 year for sure, maybe two. No one surely.
And let's be clear, Messi will cost you as much as the other 100%. Two too, because you know obviously you have wages, amortization, all that good stuff. I don't know. It's a big call they have to make. I would love it. I'd love, and maybe he'll do this. You know, Pep often gives a couple times a year those very reflective interviews or whatever with a favorite journalist where he actually says what he's thinking.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that and have him really explain.
They might not have money for either, to be fair. You know, don't forget the Kevin De Bruyne contract negotiation to a halt now because the offer that they made to him was basically on the same amount of money that he is now pretty much. And he feels that they're waiting to see on what Messi is doing to keep some money for Messi in case he wants to come and all of that. That's to the detriment of De Bruyne's new contract and maybe other transfers or new contracts or extensions or whatever.
You know what? That's an undercover story, De Bruyne's contract.
It's crazy. He's gone really quiet as well.
All right. Watch his space. All right. Enough. Manchester, how about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Our Liga, Karim Benzema bags a late equalizer for Real Madrid, who grab a point against Atleti. Jules, did Diego Simeone get something wrong in the second half? And how much did you love Luis Suarez's finish?
I'm in love outside of the right foot Suarez. And not just the outside, it's that he waits to the point that Courtois goes down outside, a little bit. And then he takes the outside of the right
foot. That's absolutely genius. I would imagine
genius.
A youth team coach would say, like, don't do that.
No, because he could have taken
finish
it
like that.
Yeah, he could have taken it inside of his right foot very early on and might have still scored. But to do that and to deceive Courtois the way he did was absolutely genius. I think maybe Atleti could have hold up the ball a bit better in the last 15 minutes and they were under pressure and I thought they dropped deeper and deeper and deeper. Maybe, but that's hard because they played so well for the first hour. And then for Benzema...
And substitutions, man. Come on, you're the king of substitutions.
Yeah.
Lamar for someone I can live with, even though Lamar I thought was playing really, really well. But what's the purpose of João Félix?
No, that's no point. Unless you wanted to go and score a second one, but they were never really going for that anyway. So that was a bit strange. I'll give you that. For the Benzema goal, genius, and you might as much as love him, and I don't want to diss him. I'm not completely sure, and I'm putting that out there. Don't abuse me. I'm just saying that... He really meant the pass to Casemiro. I think he dribbled past between the Atleti defenders and the ball is a bit too long and he goes into Casemiro, then it's a 1-2. But the whole move is great. I'm just not sure that he really means that pass.
I like to believe that he does. But
incidentally, I'm just saying.
By the way, we saw two of the greatest goalkeepers in the world, Oblak and Courtois, making ridiculous saves in
crazy
this game.
Stuff.
This could have been very different.
Yeah.
But I-Liga, right?
Yeah, completely. Oh, 3 points on...
Was it a pen?
I don't think the Felipe one.
Yeah,
I don't think it was at all.
Yeah, and I think all these people need to understand that there is still room for discretion. There's still room to look at the movement, look at it at the dynamic,
the context, of course.
And good for him. Just because you get called to VAR does not mean you need to change your decision
completely. Liverpool lose to Fulham, which means they have now lost 6 straight home games in the Premier League and 6 of the last 7 games overall. Gab, we've never seen anything like this. And what does he say about Klopp resting so many players? Sorry.
To me, this was the most concerning part, right? So he said he wanted to freshen it up because obviously, you know, you read Firmino and Kabak supposedly had knocks, or they're being rested or whatever. But then you had Fabinho on the bench and Alexander Arnold on the bench and Sadio Mane on the bench and Oxlade-Chamberlain, Curtis Jones. Thiago Alcantara. And I look at this and I say, are you resting these people because you think Leipzig might knock you out in midweek? Despite the fact that you were 2-0 up away from home. To me, that sends a really bad message.
I agree.
To me, that sends, I'm so worried about Leipzig and that I'll dismiss Fulham and I'll play the Muppets here. And, you know, look, they still had their chances. It could have been a draw. But then Fulham, in the first half especially.
I think Fulham deserved to win that game, Gab. And right. And also, when you look at the lineup, did you think, oh, they're going to win easily that game? Or did you think, we could have an upset there, considering the Liverpool team that's starting?
Yeah, I think if I'm Scott Parker, I know he's a nice guy, so he probably didn't do this. But like most nice guys, Scott Parker probably has an assistant that I don't know about who plays bad cop. And I would have said, like, boys, this is the team sheet, right? Phillips and the Williams brothers, all right? They are totally disrespecting you. Yeah. They think we're down. Let's show them what we're made of.
Yeah.
Barcelona are in that aforementioned Liga race as they beat Osasuna 2-0. Jules, they haven't lost since December 5th in La Liga.
That's true.
We can praise Koeman a little bit now, right? And is Elias the new Pogba, or is the Catalan media simply saying this because he's a tall midfielder of African descent who scores goals from outside the box?
I don't care if I wish for him that he becomes a new whatever he wants to be, because I think he's very talented, and you see the goal that, you know, the control with his right foot, he comes inside, and the shot with the left foot. He's clearly a very, very talented boy. And I just like the story. I like the idea. I like the attitude. I like he looks just kind as well, everything. So
did Pogba when he was his age. And he's still sweet and kind today, no?
Yeah, yeah, true. No, I mean, of course. Pogba is a good role model to have.
I make a joke about this, about making comparisons, which I love doing in Spain and in Italy too. Yeah. Oh, the new so-and-so.
Of course, in France.
Leave it to one side.
Yeah.
Let's give this guy a couple years as a professional. He's only played like a handful of games. And then maybe we can start drawing this. But,
yeah,
you know,
completely. But Osasuna is a game that Barca should win. I'm not sure Koeman deserves more credit than he had after Sevilla.
He had to make a tactical adjustment.
Yeah, but still, they won it. It was not great, and they did okay. The big game for them is in Paris on Wednesday, not against Osasuna the weekend.
How about the pass from Messi to Alba?
Oh, yeah, but they can find each other with their eyes closed. We know that. Sticking with Barcelona, Joan Laporta was elected president on Sunday night. Gab, you've been more positive than most about the club's prospects. Is it the same with Laporta at the helm?
Yeah, I'm not all doom and gloom. Look, I mean, Laporta has his issues. It's not because Laporta's there. I'm just saying Barcelona aren't doomed to oblivion the way some people have made it seem. And I'll probably write a column later this week on this.
But of the three candidates, he's the best one to have won, right?
Wow.
You would think. Jordi Cruyff, Alemany, that team that he's building up.
I don't know. Look, Tony Frazier obviously belongs in a zoo. But
Victor Font?
I don't know. He seemed reasonable to me.
I thought so.
I think overall, like, the pieces are in place. A lot of the pieces are in place.
Yeah.
Just when you thought Milan were ready to fall apart, they go to Verona and they win 2-0. Despite, speaking of injuries, the absences of Theo Hernandez, Ismail Benacer, Simon Kjær, Hakan Çalhanoğlu, Ante Rebic, and of course, Zlatan. I might add Sandro Tonali as well. Jules, how big was this? Did you know Radek Krunic and Diogo Dalot could score goals like this?
Well, certainly not Krunic and Diogo Dalot, to be fair, as well. First ever goal, for either of them in Serie A. Great. And you know what? I like the spirit. But we've said that before with Milan. Even when big players were missing, the spirit, the character was great. I thought Francesi was outstanding in that midfield. He was a monster. He did everything. And it's good for them because they needed that win. And Verona is not an easy place to go to. So,
as Juventus found out.
Yeah,
recently.
Well done for them. And I think that makes it all very interesting for the United game on Thursday night. Huge game coming in midweek for Juventus against Porto in the Champions League, of course. And they prepared by leaving Ronaldo on the bench against Lazio, at least initially, and coming from behind to beat the Laziale 3-1. Gab, how encouraging is this? And how bad is it if they screw up now on Tuesday against Porto?
All right, they only need to win 1-0. Right? They're 2-1 down from the first leg.
Yeah.
So you have to do it. I think it's pretty much in or out. This was encouraging, not just because it builds up your confidence when you say, hey, look, we can come from behind after gifting a stupid goal, and we can do it without Cristiano.
Yeah.
That is big. Juventus were terrible for the first 20 minutes.
As often.
As
often. They often really struggled
for the
first half hour.
They came back in. He tried different. I think the other encouraging thing from him is he tries different solutions. Danilo in midfield, yeah. Alexandre at center back, you know, and the team take to it. They have to step it up, but they are baby steps in the right direction.
Hey,
could all go out the window against Porto.
But again, Morata showing how important he is.
Morata scoring a tremendous goal, incidentally.
Yeah.
Arsenal are held to a 1-1 draw by Burnley. Jules, between Granit Xhaka's boneheadedness and the weird penalty that wasn't given on Eric Peters, the first one, I have to admit they were a bit unlucky, weren't they?
Yeah, I thought so. I didn't think it was a bad performance at all. You know, they created, certainly in the first hour, they were good. And then it's just those thin margin. You consider goal that you gift away, and then decisions don't go your way. It happens. Tottenham roll over Crystal Palace 4-1 as Gareth Bale and Harry Kane scored two each, and Kane assists Bale as well, by the way, on both. Gab, this was entertaining and effective. Can we say that Bale is back? And how does the BKA sound to you?
It's much better than BBC. BKS, evocative of BTS, of course. Hongmin Son, Bale, Kane. Look. Mourinho, of course, pointed out that they've already scored 100 goals this season. I don't know.
Only Bayern, I think, has scored as many.
How he adds it up. But look, if he can play like this, it was mesmerizing. It was breathtaking.
Yeah.
It was really good. They had those moments.
Who again?
Was it Palace?
Oh, yeah.
But hey, look, Palace, who looked so good against. Whatever. Look, let's leave it. But I think, Jules, you know, we've been harsh on Mourinho before.
Yeah.
If Bale is at this level, that adds a whole different dimension. Your boy Ndombele, for example, wasn't there either.
Yep.
So when I look at this, they can do this. They can get top four. They can do something important in the Europa League. And Mourinho's vindicated, no?
Yeah, I'm with you. This is very encouraging. But again, do it in the bigger games that are going to come. For example, against Arsenal on Sunday.
At least it's something to build on. Kylian Mbappe scores two as Paris Saint-Germain beat something called Brest, which I believe is a part of the body, if I'm not concerned. But anyway, whatever. Never mind that. Neymar is back in training and just in time for the Champions League quarterfinals, right? Because there's no way they're screwing this up against Barcelona, no?
I don't think so. I'm not going to watch. I don't care. I'm going to watch Liverpool, Leipzig, far more interesting game. Neymar is back. Your boy Florenzi is back as well, which is great. And Poch says he has a plan against Barcelona. So, hey, I trust the process, the Poch process. Leipzig keep pace with Bayern in the Bundesliga, beating Freiburg 3-0 as the only living Soloth in captivity, Gab. Gets on the score sheet again. 2-2 now. Gab, can they actually come from behind and knock out Liverpool?
Well, this Liverpool team,
anything is possible.
Anything's possible. Look, I think they're on a tear. They're on a really good run. I think in their last nine, I think the only time they've lost is against Liverpool. And, of course, that was down to individual errors. It took them a while to break them down. Kevin Campbell looked really good. I've already told you how impressed I am by the fact that he keeps changing things around.
Rotating.
Nobody's guaranteed the starting spot. And it seems to work. Yeah. Why not? It is a big ask. You always can have the threat on the counter as well with Liverpool. No matter how badly Salah plays, he's still really, really fast.
Yeah.
But look, they're going to give it their best shot. And if they get knocked out, gives them a better chance in the Bundesliga.
Exactly.
Jules, I know you love your Tekkers. Help me celebrate your
achievements.
No look pass that gave an injury-riddled Leicester a huge win against Brighton.
Keeps them third. Huge pass, huge assist, huge goal from Amati, of all people as well. And then Tielemans, and we've said it before when we praised Leicester and Brendan Rodgers and Yuri himself, he's been outstanding all season.
Yeah.
Such a talented, classy player. One of the best number eights in the Premier League this season, without a doubt.
If you haven't seen him, that Lewis Dunk, that look that he gives lying on the ground when he stretches. Lewis Dunk's been really good, right?
Yeah, you don't blame him.
But just that look of despair, it's incredible.
Yeah, and I just think those kind of passes, either you've got them in you, but you don't work on them, you don't create them. It's just, he's just come there. You know, that's the gift of geniuses, people like him. Bayer Leverkusen beat Borussia Mönchengladbach in the battle of the Champions League pretenders in the Bundesliga. Gab, it's five straight defeat now for Gladbach since the announcement that Marco Rose was taking over at Dortmund. Is it just all about karma, right?
About the numbers speak for themselves.
Five defeats in a row.
You know, and as we know, karma is a female dog. Look, I don't know. This was everything about there. Look. In the real world, managers leave clubs for what they think are bigger jobs, right? And this always happens, and they all have contact during the season. There is a good way of handling it. There is a bad way of handling it. Whichever way was done here, was the really, really bad way. Terrible. I don't know if we blame Marco Rosa, if we blame the club. Obviously, it was a club who announced, oh, he has opted to ignore the final year of his contract. Yeah. But to have this all play out in public, they're destroying Gladbach's season. It's simple as
such
that.
Such a shame. Such a shame.
It feels really weird saying this, given that it's early March. But yeah, we have. Are they the first champions in Europe? I don't know.
Yeah, I think
Rangers have clinched the Scottish title for the 55th time. Jules, not bad from that Steven Gerrard fella, and also not bad considering that in the past 10 years since they last won it. The club went bust, started from the lower divisions. A lot of stuff has happened.
Loads of stuff happened in the last 10 years. They've rebuilt that team and that club completely. And I think Stevie G, for his second year in charge, has been magnificent. If you watch them play, it's easy to say, oh, but it's only Scotland. No, it's not only Scotland, because they're really performing in Europe as well, in the Europa League. And he has this team.
So it's not just a Celtic implosion that we've seen.
No, it's part of it, of course. And he helped Rangers a lot, but they're still unbeaten, which is incredible in March. They play well, really good going forward. They've got great patterns of play. They're aggressive. They're disciplined. And as a first experience for a manager like him, so young, I think it's pretty impressive the work he's done. And there's no doubt that he's going to go and achieve far, far bigger thing than just winning a Scottish title for Rangers. CONMEBOL have confirmed that South American World Cup qualifiers that were supposed to be played later this month in March during the international break have been suspended. Gab, I think it's the right choice, but how will they fix that now that they won't be able to play those games?
You have to say, I didn't think it was going to come to this.
You said because clubs threatened to not.
It's because the United Kingdom, it's all down to the United Kingdom, frankly, because a big part of it is because of their quarantine rules, which that they don't have any sporting exemptions from countries on the so-called red list, which includes South America and Portugal. And FIFA has said anybody who needs to quarantine more than 5 days, clubs do not need to release them. So at that point, once the likes of City and Liverpool come out and say, well, we're not going to release our players, then you've got a problem. You also have a problem within South America, though. And I think this is what really tipped the balance, is that there are restrictions on flying within different South American countries. I think it's going to be tough to fix. I think the most realistic way is to maybe go to triple headers.
We have sometimes in Europe.
Like UEFA have done in Europe. Yeah. There's been suggestions of, well, why don't you play the games in Europe? Well, the reason is, guess what? Maybe most of Brazil or Argentina play in Europe, but that's not the case for a lot of these other teams. There's been suggestions of there's the Copa America this summer. Can you somehow use that as some sort of surrogate for, that seems to be like a hornet's nest. Best solution, I think, is going to 3 games. You only need to do it twice. And hopefully they'll be able to do something like that. Suboptimal. But then again, it's CONMEBOL. There's 10 teams and six of them qualified? Come on. Sevilla crashed to their third straight defeat, losing to Elche 2-1. Jules, that old Lopetegui magic is waning, and top four is now in jeopardy too.
And suddenly, those defeats that they had, the Ocampos penalty missed against Barcelona, psychologically is coming back. And it's hurting them a lot. He made loads of changes because I think in the back of his head, of course, there's the Champions League game against Dortmund. But they just were not good. And even if they took the lead, they were not good. And I think they deserved that defeat, maybe more than others that they suffered in the last few days.
Percent chance that they beat Dortmund?
I still think it's 50. No, I was going to say 50-50. Dortmund now, 60-40 to Dortmund.
Really?
Yeah,
they realistically need to win by two clear goals.
Yeah, but I still think it's an open tie considering Dortmund can't defend.
We're not off the Lopetegui bandwagon.
No, not completely yet. Napoli beat Bologna 3-1 and your boy Victor Osimhen comes off the bench to score a great goal, just what Rino Gattuso wanted.
Yeah, and this is after getting a knock on the head and the concussion. Gattuso needed to settle things down because Aurelio De Laurentiis, the president, there were rumors, there were suggestions he might get sacked. There was the incident with Insigne, by the way, had a great game, scored two goals.
Again,
it shows you that Gattuso may not be the greatest tactical genius in the world, but the players play for him they like him, and he's a really, really good man manager. And it leaves you wondering, what if Osimhen had been there all season long? How good would this team be? Now, my personal hero, Jorge Sampaoli, the artist formerly known as my personal hero, Jorge Sampaoli, he's letting me down again as Marseille are out of the French Cup. Jules, please tell me they lost to somebody I've heard of.
No, you haven't. I mean, he wasn't on the bench because he's self-isolating, so he will be on the bench on Wednesday.
Oh, good. So it's not his fault.
So it's not his fault. It was the last game of Nasser Larguet that I don't think many people will remember as the Marseille manager, seeing how bad he's been in that interim role.
Who did they lose to?
Canet Roussillon from the fourth division. Mm. I mean, the whole thing was a car crash.
Where is that?
It's near Perpignan, so in the French Catalonia. And it's not just that they lost. It's that they were beaten and well beaten by a team that dominated them, a team that played three games in the last 4 months because their league has been suspended due to the virus. So it was just so embarrassing. It was incredible. I mean, they were trolled by the Canet mascot who had like a Boca Junior shirt for Benedetto. I mean, it was an incredible game, seen everything you want. And again, Marseille letting their own fans down. And just a few days after, their owner, Franck Marcourt, said, we're going to win the Champions League. The objective is to win the Champions League. Start by winning the French Cup, and then we can talk.
La magie de la coupe, right?
Exactly. West Ham's owner says that Declan Rice is a £100 million footballer. David Moyes disagrees, Gab, and says he's worth far more than that. Far, far more even. Gab, your thought? I mean, I'm lost for words.
Yeah, look, it's the old thing, right? You're worth what somebody's willing to pay you.
Yeah, but and I can tell you now, no one is ready to pay $100 million for Declan Rice.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not even pre-pandemic, maybe in some future parallel universe. You know, people just don't, like, I don't want to have a go at Declan Rice. And it's an issue, obviously, in the summer when Chelsea tried to get him. And, you know, they were quoted $80 million or whatever it was. And we all love Declan Rice. But the reality is players who play Declan Rice's position do not cost $100 million. No. I was trying to go through memory, like, who is the highest paid defensive midfielder? People will spend that on center. Well, they haven't yet, but at some point they might spend it on central defenders. But
it's like Rodri, like 50 or something.
I mean, there might be somebody I'm forgetting, but yeah, that's the reality.
Yeah.
And that's Man City, and that's no pandemic, and that's Rodri, that's not Declan Rice. So I don't know, but hey, right now I really like David Moyes as a person, and there's no argument with the fact that West Ham have been unbelievable this season, and he's done a phenomenal job.
Yeah,
and
completely.
Wouldn't it be funny? I mean, I don't think he will, but if he won his fourth Manager of the Year award, wouldn't that be the ultimate troll for Mourinho, who of course has won as many Premier League Manager of the Year awards as you have, Jules?
Yeah, and zero. You have zero.
Both of us combined. There you go. Reports in Sweden say that Zlatan Ibrahimovic could be making his return to the national team after an absence of nearly 5 years. Jules, just in time for Euro 2020.
We thought it would not be possible after the, how can we put it, the altercation or certainly the criticism that he made towards the national team head coach. But hey, maybe they cleared the air, maybe they had a discussion, and now he could be back, 39-year-olds.
Ibra and Isak up front, the two giants.
Oh, my God, can you imagine that?
Oh, my God.
Suddenly, we like Sweden again.
Hyped and amped.
Yeah. Manchester United announced that they made a profit of £33.6 million over the past 6 months. Gab, the Glazers don't even need fans in the stands to make money, do they? It's incredible.
No, they don't. And they don't need Jadon Sancho. They don't need any of this.
No.
Right?
Why are spending money?
It's just a money spending, is a cash spending machine. Cash producing machine.
Earning money.
I don't, look, there's technical reasons for it. They made money in the Champions League, whatever. The reality is that this is pretty unreal. And,
incredible.
You know, if the Glazers decided to never take any dividends, I mean, the debt did grow a little bit, whatever, and they just put everything back in the club, they could just buy everybody and their mother. Doesn't mean they'd be good, but it is. I think it also shows how, you know, the pandemic did do a lot of damage, but clubs who are well run have found ways to adjust and mitigate the damage.
But then the exception. No other clubs in the whole world will post those profits.
No, not to this level.
Not during
a pandemic. This is just unreal. Yeah. Which is, by the way, could explain why Ed Woodward is still in a job.
Of course.
And the Glazers still like him.
Yeah, of course.
That part of it
is brilliant.
Spot on, time and again.
Yeah.
Right, that's all we've got time for today. Please remember, you can join us. We'll be back on Thursday.
Yeah, definitely.
How
Champions
about
League
that?
Week as well.
Yes, big Champions League. Liverpool against Leipzig with a comeback. Maybe, who knows? Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.